Alright, chapter 12. If you read 13, you're just a week ahead. This is a good chapter. Now we move into the second part of the book of Revelation. Chapter 1 through 11 has to do with the foundation. Chapter 12 on, we're starting now to look at the last day events. One of the things I would invite you to do is remember as we read these chapters, the only two comparisons that I think we need to make in any of them is that we have the adversary Satan on one side and we have Christ on the other side. So when we talk about power, when we talk about worship, when we talk about thrones, when we talk about marks, remember the only conflict is between the devil and Christ, none other. So please keep that in mind as we start reading. Chapter 13 is going to be the beast out of the sea. Then we're going to look at the beast out of the earth. Again, it's always comparison between Christ and His people and the devil and what he wants to accomplish. All right, let's start with chapter 12. Somebody read the first couple of verses.
And a great sign appeared in heaven, a woman clothed with the sun and the moon under her feet, and on her head a crown of 12 stars. And she was with child, and she cried out, being in labor and in pain, to give birth.
All right, let's stop there. So here we have a wondrous sign, an amazing sign. This is a very special event. And there appears in heaven a woman clothed with sun, moon under her feet, and a crown of 12 stars. If we were going to do a verse-by-verse, which we're not, discussion on chapter 12, you would see that everything in chapter 12 leads right back to an understanding of the Old Testament. All of these symbols in chapter 12 are right from the Old Testament. The book was written for believers, mostly Jews at this time, and they understood every symbol that was talked about. Now, let's start with just a few of them. Woman. What does woman represent? The church. We could go back and read probably 20 verses in the Old Testament, if we took time, where the children of Israel were the bride of God. His calling of His people were the bride, or was the woman in the marriage. So woman has always designated God's following, God's church, God's people. Does anybody remember anything in the Old Testament about a sun, a moon, and a bunch of stars? Pardon? Joseph had a dream. What did he see? Sun bowing down, the moon bowing down. In his case, 11 stars, him being the 12th star. Somebody look up real quick, if they would, Song of Solomon. I think it's 6:10. This will give you an example, just very, the only one I'm going to use from the Old Testament. Says a woman clothed with the sun and the moon. Now read Solomon 6:10, whoever's got it. Song of Solomon.
Who is this that grows like the dawn, as beautiful as the full moon, as pure as the sun, as awesome as an army with banners?
Okay, that's far enough. So see, you can always see the symbolism. It's all there. God's people always clothed with the sun and the moon, the stars, and so forth. Says she was pregnant and cried out in pain as she was about to give birth. Birth to who?
Jesus.
Yes. Christ came through the lineage of the children of Israel. It's to understand, though, that I don't know what childbirth is. Never had one. So I hear it's painful. But this pain here in the Greek is not childbirth pain. It is the pain of martyrs that are being tortured. This is the greatest pain that someone can have. So it's a very strong pain. She was pregnant and cried out in great pain as she was about to give birth. All right, now we have another sign. Verse 3, somebody read till I stop you.
Then another sign appeared in heaven, an enormous red dragon with seven heads and ten horns and seven crowns on it.
Okay, let's stop there for a second. Then now here comes another amazing sign in heaven. Notice it says an enormous red dragon. Now who is this? This is the devil, the adversary. And he has seven heads, ten horns, seven crowns. Where have we heard this before? What book?
I think Daniel.
Book of Daniel. So here we go, right back to the deal. Okay, Edward, read verse 4.
His tail swept the head of the stars out of the sky and flung them to the earth. The dragon stood in front of the woman who was about to give birth so that he might devour her child the moment he was born.
Okay, let's stop there. When did this take place? Second half, how about the first part? Pardon? Okay. Okay, first part. Yeah, the dragon swept with his tail and took a third of the stars out of the sky and flung them down to the earth. So in heaven, the tail represents deception. He deceived, undercut God, and was good enough to convince a third of the angels to follow him, and they came down to this earth. Now, the woman was about to give birth, so that he wanted to devour her child the moment it was born. Now, let's see who the child was. Somebody read the next verse.
And she bore a male child who was to rule all nations with a rod of iron, and her child was caught up to God and to his throne.
Okay. Now who would the child be?
Jesus.
Do y'all agree with that?
I'd agree with that.
Okay. Yes, it is Jesus. Says that, and was he there to devour the child at birth? In what way?
The kings that were killing babies.
Yeah, they had philosophers that had studied, who had understood the prophecies. They knew about when the Messiah was going to be born, had the wrong concept, but made no difference. So from the very beginning, do you think Satan was interested in those prophecies?
Oh, yes.
Absolutely. And so he was there urging on that he would try to devour, keep Christ from being born. And the child was snatched up to God and taken to his throne. How would you interpret the word snatched? It's kind of a funny... Does anybody have any other different word in their version?
Caught up.
Caught up. Okay. Anything else? Okay. Yeah, in the Greek it's the same word as ascend. You could say when Jesus ascended, Jesus was snatched. It's the same word. So snatch, kind of a funny word. To me, snatch means just reach down and grab. But a literal translation would be that he ascended up to God and to the throne. So here we have the devil on the earth wanting to devour the Messiah that was to be born. The Messiah was here. By the way, how many days did the Messiah minister?
1260.
3.5 years. How many times in prophecy do we see 3.5 years?
Yeah, many.
1260. Just an alternative thought. I'll just throw them out. But think about that one. All right, read what happens to the church. God, Christ is ascended to heaven. Verse 6.
The woman fled into the desert to a place prepared for her by God, where she might be taken care of for 1,260 days.
Okay. Now, there's all kinds of understanding on 1,260 days. It's interesting that it says that after God ascended, the church fled to the desert for 1,260 days. We certainly don't, for those that like to follow the 1,260 day timeline, it certainly doesn't start at that time. So, but that's not important anyway. What's more important is how's your understanding that the church fled into the desert? That's what's important. This particular passage?
Yeah.
No.
That's not it.
No. We done. Chapter 12 is a big picture.
It's
big picture.
It goes quickly.
It's a big picture. So, I mean, John is getting down in chapter 12 and on. He's getting down to the purpose of the book, which is to reveal Jesus Christ. And that's why it's important as we read from here to chapter 22, it's always a conflict, a comparison, a difference between God and Satan. God's people and those that follow Satan. So here we have a male child who will rule the nations. By the way, a correct interpretation of that word, rule the nations, is in the Greek, is shepherd. He will shepherd the nations. Verse 5. I move back up. Trying to set a timeline. So he will not rule the nations particularly, but he will shepherd the nations. And of course, Christ refers to himself over and over and over as I am the good shepherd. He will rule with an iron scepter, which means royalty, power. And her child was snatched up to God. Same word for ascended to God. And he took his throne. So you see the timeline? Now we're moving on. The woman fled into the desert to a place prepared for her by God where she would be taken care of for 3.5 years. Now my question is, how do you interpret the word desert? First of all, Terry, did your brother love being in the desert?
Yes.
Oh, forget him.
Well, isn't that a spiritual context, the desert, the wilderness, spiritually?
So you would take it more spiritually than physically?
Well, isn't that what, when you say desert or wilderness, it's usually pertaining to something spiritual, isn't it?
Okay, well, we'll see if we come to that conclusion. Okay. I think we will.
Okay.
But that's a good one. How do you interpret desert? Pardon?
I'm thinking of the description of John the Baptist. He ministered in the wilderness and the people came out from the cities.
Okay. Who else in the Old Testament had had desert experience? Pardon?
Elijah
did, but who else had one for lots of years?
Moses
did. Children of Israel did. Okay. Now, what do you think that when Diane says this is a spiritual desert, what do you make of it?
Among non-believers.
Okay, so you think that the church then is cast out among a bunch of unbelievers. Okay. Pardon?
How about the Dark Ages?
Dark Ages? I certainly can see your background.
Christ is not there anymore.
Okay, physically or spiritually?
Physically.
Physically, okay. All right. What would you do if the word was interpreted as retreat?
For me, I'd come to the same conclusion, because retreat to me is a spiritual thing.
Okay.
But that's how I feel about it.
Sure. All right.
I would see that as a military move.
A retreat?
Yes.
Okay. Did I use the right word? What do you do when you go off on something for a weekend?
That's a retreat.
That's a retreat. Okay. I took Spanish all the way through school, so English is new language to me. So we're not talking about a military retreat. We're talking about a spiritual retreat. If you wanted to read this in the Greek, does this change the thinking on it? And the woman fled into a retreat prepared for her by God so he could take care of her.
Sounds good.
Well, that's a literal translation. And it is spiritual. And she'll be in this retreat for 3.5 years. Where have we heard that one before? Revelation, Daniel, and Christ's ministry, 3.5 years. Now, he goes back, and there was a war in heaven. Michael and his angels fought against the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought back. But somebody read verse 8, because there's a word in there that I think is very interesting.
But they did not prevail, nor was a place found them in heaven any longer.
Okay. So the word you have is prevail. Somebody else read in different versions.
But he was not strong enough.
Yeah, that's the one I'm looking for. What version is that?
New International.
Well, that should be the one I have. That's good. Any other versions? What do you have there? Prevail, strong?
Strong. American Standard reads just like the NIV.
Okay. Yeah, New American Standard, by the way, is the closest to the Greek.
Yeah.
Yeah. So King James has prevail. Actually, the literal word is he was not strong enough. I want you to get that picture of war in heaven. Michael, Satan, but he wasn't strong enough. Do you think that this is talking physically?
Who wasn't strong enough?
Pardon?
Satan wasn't.
Says right there that he fought against the devil and his angels, but he was not strong enough.
Okay.
What do you think the battle was in heaven?
Spiritual.
Okay. Anybody have any other ideas? What was the battle over?
Character of God.
Pardon?
Power.
Okay, what else?
God's treatment of them, I guess.
Okay, what else?
What God is like.
Okay. What was the charges that Satan had against God? What did he go around and tell the other angels about God?
He's not fair.
He's not fair. I have a better way. But he wasn't strong enough. Not physically at all. His argument was weak. Now what's interesting was it was good enough to deceive a third of the angels. And what did it do to the other two-thirds? They sat there and wondered. Says a lot about God. that you could sit there for thousands of years and say, God, I really think you're right. I'm here enough because I believe you, but I'm just not perfectly clear that you're correct. Boy, how God was long-suffering and kind and gracious to set and let those people be there, the angels be there. It says a lot about Him. But Satan's argument was not strong enough, and they lost their place in heaven. The great dragon was hurled down. That ancient serpent, many times in the Old Testament, starting with Job all through, he was called, of course, serpent in Genesis 3, but he was called the great serpent, the great Leviathan, the great reptile, called the devil or Satan, who leads the whole world astray. He was hurled to the earth, and the angels with him. Now, somebody read the next, I think it's just verse 10. It's a long one. Read verse 10 and listen very closely.
And I heard a loud voice in heaven say, now have come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of His Christ. For the accuser of our brothers, who accuses them before our God day and night, has been hurled down.
Okay. Now, got a question for you. At what time is this verse talking about that Satan was hurled down?
The end time.
End time?
I think it was before the earth was created.
Before the earth was created? Certainly have 180 degrees from there, but that's okay. Who else would like to venture a guess? What verse 10 especially, what time was Satan hurled down to the earth? Somebody guess.
I think you would see
it's the end of time.
Pardon?
I'm thinking it's the end of time too. At first I thought it was beginning, but...
Okay.
I mean, because they're talking about now comes salvation.
Okay.
The authority of His Christ.
Okay. That's reading good.
Yeah.
And you would see in chapter to end in verse 12.
Okay.
We haven't got there yet.
I know Jim's pondering. That's why I've been waiting. I can tell Sweetie Pie he's pondering.
It says here, the kingdom of our God and the authority of His Christ have come.
Okay.
Now, that little statement you read to us from page 38. Patriarchs and prophets.
Acts of the Apostles.
Acts of the Apostles. Said that when Christ returned to heaven, all authority was given to Him.
Okay.
That's true. In this event,
okay.
He is...
All right, let's... Yeah, I'm sorry, I interrupted you. Keep going.
Was at the time of Christ's return to heaven when Satan and his angels were banned from heaven.
Okay. So you coming off something out in left field. So let's work on that a little bit. All right, let's walk ourselves through things. In the beginning, Satan declared war. And a third of the angels believed. And Satan was cast to the earth. Did he still have access to heaven?
Yes.
Yes, he did.
How do we know?
Job.
All right, Job's perfect example. He was on the councils of heaven. And he got there and God was taking a report or a conversation. I don't know exactly what he was doing. But anyhow, he got around and Satan says, well, let me tell you what's going on down there on that earth. Man, I am taking them left and right. I'm stomping through there. Those people are believing me. I'm creating havoc, however he wanted to put it. And God said, well, What about my good friend Job? So we all know the story. There are other times in Isaiah and Ezekiel we're talking about where he had access to the counsels of heaven. When did he stop having access to the counsels of heaven? At the cross. Why?
Because he was beaten.
He had no case. Useless. Because the angels in heaven said, we've allowed you to be up here. God allowed you to be up here to always present your case. But you're now wasting your time because we know who you are. Now remember, any time you read a text, you have to read in context. Now let me reread 10 with 11. And then I think we'll see that Jim is absolutely correct. It was at the time of the cross that Satan was, quote, in this context, hurled from heaven. He no longer had access because nobody would listen. Now let's reread it. Then I heard a loud voice in heaven say, now have come the salvation and the power and the kingdom of our God and the authority of His Christ. For the accuser of the brothers, who accused them before our God day and night, has been hurled down. They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb and by the word of the testimony. They do not love their lives so much as to shrink from death. Therefore rejoice, your heavens, and who dwell in them. Now listen to the next part. But woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has gone down to you. Can't you see the angels in heaven singing this song? Because every question they've ever had for God for thousands of years was answered at the cross. And they say to the earth, woe to you. It says, now our salvation, the power, kingdom of our God, the authority of the Christ, the accuser of our brothers, who accuse them before God day and night, has been hurled down. They overcame him by the blood of the Lamb, the word of the testimony. Therefore rejoice, you heavens, and dwell in them. But woe to the earth and the sea, because the devil has come down to you. He is filled with fury, because he knows that his time is short. And what is the work of the devil?
To turn people against God.
Yeah. And why is he mad?
He hates Satan and Jesus.
Pardon?
He hates Jesus.
Why?
Because I guess Jesus won the conflict between the two.
He's lost. He lost. In the corporate world, which I've been very good in the corporate worlds. I've worked for four of them. How many times have I been fired from them?
All
four. That's right. That's why I don't work in the corporate world. See? What happens in the corporate wars? Man, you get mad. Logic is out. You go for the throat. Satan so much hates God and the decision that Satan made, that he wants to drag every person down he can find with him.
And the story of Adonijah, the son of David, when David was on his deathbed, Adonijah got his buddies together, some from the military, some of the priests. David was nearly dead, and he said, I am going to steal the kingdom. I am going to be king.
David wanted Solomon as king. And Adonijah got all his buddies together, and he declared himself king. And they were throwing a tremendous party. They slaughtered lots of animals. They were feasting. And then Bathsheba went into David. She said, David, spare my life and the life of my son, Solomon. And David said, what? What? And then the priest came in. David saved the priest and said, yes, you need to spare the life of Bathsheba and your son, because Adonijah has declared himself king. And then David said, prepare the king's mule. And the messenger went to Adonijah and said, do you hear all the commotion in the city? Solomon has been declared king. And Adonijah runs and grabs the horns for mercy in the temple. He should have been struck dead. God gave him another chance.
Mm-hmm.
He tried again to usurp the kingdom. And in his last effort, he was killed.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a story that the Hebrews probably understood, which kind of fits into where we are.
Yeah, absolutely. He goes on to say that when the dragon saw that he had been hurled into the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. The woman was given
two wings.
Thank you. I appreciate that. I'm just saying, if y'all were awake. Y'all are. Two wings of a great eagle, so that she might fly to the place prepared for her in the retreat, where she would be taken care of for how long?
3.5 years.
Where did we hear about the two wings of a great eagle? Anywhere in the Old Testament that you can think of? Well, I'm running out of time, so I'll help you. When God delivered the Israelites from Egypt, He talked about being on the wings of an eagle, that He would take care of them. Then from His mouth, notice in both cases it says the church went into the wilderness, went into the retreat, went into spiritual deal, where God would take care of them. Both places, there is no doubt that God will take care of His church. The question always, always stands is, what is God's church? Well, we'll come to this later on in Revelation. Then from His mouth the serpent spewed water like a river to overtake the woman and sweep her away from with the torrent. And the earth helped the woman by opening up its mouth and swallowing the river that the dragon had spewed out of his mouth. What this means is that the dragon will spew forth as water lies of deception. He always works by deception. And it's always close to the truth. Very first deception, he said, in the Garden of Eden was... God said, if you eat it, you'll die. I'm telling you, look at me, I've eaten it. First of all, he misquoted God. But that's another lesson. But the answer is, while matter what the deception is, God will open up ways that will swallow that deception so that the truth can always come forth and shine. The good news of Revelation 12 is, who has won? It's over. God has won and the devil has lost. It's just like in World War II.
I just said, let's go to heaven then.
It is the good news. It's just like in World War II, when D-Day, when Normandy was invaded, the Germans were defeated. But when did the war end?
Japan was defeated.
Yeah. You had a few months before Germany officially surrendered. Then you had almost a year after Normandy where Hiroshima was bombed and Japan. But the war was over when Normandy was invaded. The outcome was very clear. It just took a long time for the right people to get the message. The war in heaven is over. Now we come to what most people think is the outstanding verse in Revelation 12. Then the dragon was enraged at the church and went off to make war against the rest of her offspring. Now I want everybody to look at their version. I'm going to read mine and I want you to read yours. Those who obey God's commandments. Now what do you... Anybody have anything different than that phrase?
It says, who keep the commandments.
Yeah, just who keep the commandments, okay? Those who obey God's commandments. The next one is the interesting one. What does yours say in the next one? First of all, let's go to good old King James or the New King James.
And have the testimony of Jesus Christ.
Have the testimony of Jesus Christ. Any other versions?
And hold to the testimony of Jesus.
Holds to the testimony of Jesus.
And bears testimony to Jesus.
Bears the testimony to Jesus.
Confesses
the testimony of Jesus. What does American Standard have?
Hold to the testimony of Jesus.
Okay. This one has, and hold to the testimony of Jesus.
What version do you have?
New International. Okay. What was the testimony of Jesus?
That he was the Son of God and was raised up by God.
Okay. What else?
He came to show who the Father was.
Okay.
Well, since we only got about 5 minutes, we covered it pretty well, I think, Wednesday night in Matthew 5.
What's Decalogue?
Matthew 25?
Matthew 5.
The 25 was one.
25, okay.
The sheep and the goats?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah, it's 25.
25, okay.
Can we, the testimony, when the temple is involved, always means the Decalogue, if I recollect properly. But it says nothing here about the temple.
Share with me your first statement. The testimony of Jesus refers to the Decalogue.
The testimony of the tabernacle. Testimony in the sanctuary. Whenever the testimony is associated with that, it always means the Decalogue. If I got it put together properly.
In other words,
the Ark of the Testimony means the Ark of the Decalogue.
The Ark of the Testament.
Yes.
Not the Ark of the Testimony. The Ark of the Testament contained the Decalogue.
Okay.
This is the testimony.
You mean all these years I've had that confused?
Wouldn't the testimony be the salvation of Jesus Christ?
Okay.
Could it also be who bear a witness to Jesus Christ?
Okay.
Well, I think faith that he's going to come back and get us.
Okay.
The testimony that Jesus bore about the character of God.
Okay. How about the left-hand side? I haven't heard anything.
Well, how can you have a testimony of something you don't know anything about? Wouldn't you need to know about the salvation in order to give a testimony?
of Jesus Christ dying on the cross for you?
That's the most powerful testimony. It's an old story. I tell it every once in a while, but I'll tell it again because I like to. Charles Laughton. Anybody know who Charles Laughton is?
Yes.
Yes. Great actor. Stood before a great congregation and he read the 23rd Psalm. And when it was all over, got a standing ovation. A little bit later in the same ceremony, some farmer type, uneducated person got up and somehow read the 23rd Psalm. And when it was over, there was no ovation. There were tears running down people's eyes. And so afterwards, somebody went to Charles Laughton and said, well, what kind of was the difference? And he said, I read the 23rd Psalm, and I did a good job. He read the 23rd Psalm, and he knew the author. Mm-hmm. What the people of the world are looking for are the people who understand the commandments of God. Love God, love your fellow man, the Ten Commandments, put it any way you want to put it. And hold to the testimony of Jesus, who said over and over, if you've seen me, you've seen the Father. And the marks of God's chosen people, the offspring of the church, will be those that hold to the commandments of God, which is what Leroy is referring to in the great judgment of Matthew 25, for those that missed prayer meeting, was very simply, how did you treat your brother? Did you visit him when he was in jail? Did you give him clothes when he was naked? Did you take care of him spiritually when he had spiritual concerns? And hold to the testimony, when people look at us, they should see God revealed in us.
Amen. Yes.
It is not what we teach. It is not what we write. It's the personal testimony. For you see, the Jews had the written word and knew it much better than we would ever think of knowing it. And when Jesus came and revealed what that word meant, the more the religious the person was, the more he wanted to crucify Christ. Because he was so set in their ways that we have everything pat and down and correct. And they didn't even recognize God in Christ. Now, when we get to Revelation 19, we're going to see testimony of Jesus is the spirit of prophecy. Well, we historically know what we do with that text, but please keep in context. The testimony of Jesus is to reveal the character of God and who He is. That's why it's my estimation. It's important as we go through the next to understand the controversy is not about which church is correct. The controversy is not which ideology is correct. The controversy has never been over what day to keep. The controversy has only been over, do you want to follow God or do you want to follow the accuser of the brethren? That's why I think that middle text is important to understand tonight. When the angels, the universe, finally saw at the cross how right God was, that's when they began to sing their song of salvation and shut Satan away, because going to heaven was a waste of time. Well, what a message we have to let people know the victory is won. Just find Christ and the rest will come. Father in heaven, thank you for this chapter. Thank you for again assuring us that even if we're in the desert spiritually, that you have found a place, you will take care of us. Thank you for the hope you give us and help us, Father, to come closer to you is our prayer. In the name of Jesus, amen.